The only explanation.
The only explanation for your defeat is treason, screeched Swarbrick, bashing the rail with his fist.
Leo had lost a battle with the odds well in his favour, so he could think of plenty of others. Recklessness, arrogance, trickery, hesitation, bad weather, bad allies, bad luck. Or, for instance, that when money was finally found to send the army new boots, Rizinow had ordered them supplied with a collection of his essays instead. Swarbrick had written the foreword. But treason was the only explanation the court of the people wanted to hear.
I did everything I could to win, sir, bellowed General Bell. I mean, citizen, you won't find a more loyal man than me. Precisely what a traitor would see, screeched Swarbrick, while drunks in the gallery jeered like the crowd at a slum prize fight.
Leo had watched them turn Sergeant Bell into General Bell after Judge seized power, standing red-faced on the very spot where he now stood trial, made commander of the People's Army without a day's experience as an officer. Brint's jacket had fitted him badly. Brint's responsibilities fitted him even worse. But the representatives had filled the dome with sentimental applause even so, slapped his back as they sent him up the aisle to fight Lord Marshal Forrest and his royalists. Most of them must have guessed how it had ended. Leo certainly had. But since the great change, appearances were more important than realities. Savine would have said they always had been.
From what I hear, muttered Leo, that man was the best sergeant in the army.
Glarwood nodded sadly.
Solid, careful, caring, not much imagination.
He could have been describing himself.
All the qualities that make a terrible general, murmured Durand.
I understand you served with a notorious royalist, Lord Marshal Forrest.
Swarbrick sneered the name as if Forrest was some monster no adult believed in.
At the Battle of Osrum, when he was a sergeant major, during the wars in Styria, when he rose by the king's favour through the commissioned ranks.
Bell blinked about at the benches, but there was no sentimental applause now.
I did, but you knew him well.
Everyone in the army knew him.
And respected him?
Of course, he was...
Bell saw the trap too late. His face turned even redder than it had at his promotion.
No one had a reason to disrespect him. No one had a bad word for the man.
Admiration! Shrieked Swarbrick. For one of the most implacable and perfidious enemies of the Great Change, for a man who sheds Union blood on Union soil to put the snake Orso back above us.
And he pointed to the king with that always trembling finger. Rizinow had put Orso on a smaller and smaller chair. Now Judge had gone a step further and locked him in a cage while the court was in session. All it had done was give him a kind of louche dignity. His knowing smile seemed to ask what kind of a coward someone would have to be to fear a coward like him. Swarbrick thumped at the rough-sawn rail of the dock again.
An army of honest patriots could never be beaten fairly by Lord Marshal Forrest's royalist hirelings.
He rubbed at his hand, having clearly picked up a splinter from the shitty carpentry.
You came to an accommodation with them, didn't you? You betrayed the Great Change.
Gasps of disgust from every side. Leo expected the truth was simpler. Bell had been promoted far beyond his ability and thrown against a dedicated enemy on ground of their choosing. His army was ill-provisioned, ill-equipped, and stuffed with purity officers who bastardized every military decision with politics. The surprise was that disaster hadn't struck sooner.
There was no bloody accommodation with the enemy, shouted Bell. They caught us strung out on the roads in the rain. My men were exhausted. The purity officers insisted we march double time. Always someone else to blame. The purity officers now, burners of unimpeachable pedigree, keen to get to grips with the hated enemy. But the People's Army have been in the field for weeks. They've barely been paid. Now they're hardly being fed. And whose responsibility is it that the army should be prepared, might I ask, if not the general in charge? Ours, I suppose. The benches bristled. Even Leo grunted denials. You couldn't give seeds of accusation the chance to take root. Before you knew it, suspicion would be sprouting everywhere. Disgust rained down on Bell from the public gallery. Poor bastard, muttered Glaward, with the sympathy of one big lackluster man for another.
I've always been loyal. Bell had tears in his eyes. Ask anyone I've served with.
The chamber fell silent as Judge shifted forwards from her chair, long fingers sliding across the table like a cat stretching out to sharpen its claws. Swarbrick might blather up a hurricane, but everyone knew it was Judge's few words that counted. It's true I hear some fine reports of your conduct, Bell. It's how you got the job in the first place. Put yourself in danger to save wounded soldiers. Gave up meals so others could eat. Walked while sick men rode on your horse. Noble stuff. It'd make me weep in a storybook. Judge stretched further, her black eyes fixed on the accused. But I weep very easily. You told us you did everything you could to win.
I did, Citizeness Judge. Please believe.
But you didn't win. Bell blinked, mouth half open. Can't say for sure you're a traitor, said Judge, but I know for a fact you're a loser, and for a general that's just as bad. Dare I say, it's fucking worse. She lifted her hammer and smacked the battered table.
Guilty! Get him to the Tower of Chains!
Broad caught Bell under the arm and hauled him from the dock. Leo dimly remembered a time, a few weeks ago, when there had been a middle ground, room for compromises on some things, some of the time. Now, everyone was an extremist or a traitor to the cause, and any trace of doubt was a betrayal.
We need a new general!
Someone roared from the back of the benches, while the old one was still being dragged to his doom.
These damned royalists have to be stopped!
Durand leaned close. Now? Leo had to smother a smile. Their thinking was more in step than ever.
Let's test the ground at least, he murmured.
Citizens!
Juran sprang to his feet.
Representatives! Officers of the court! Thanks to foreign intrigues and royalist conspiracies, we have faced frequent defeat in the field.
He'd always been one of the quickest thinkers Leo knew, and it had taken him no time at all to learn the language of the Great Change. He made a fine speaker, earnest and believable, with a little flush of passionate colour in his cheeks.
Lord Marshal Forrest and his traitors should never have been allowed to get the better of the People's Army. But now our patriots are in disarray, low on morale, paralysed by corruption, conspiracy, and criminal incompetence.
Leo glanced over at Court and gave him the slightest nod. He rose to roar the peace they'd agreed on.
Only 5 days ago, a group of farmers on the coast near Keln, banding together against Gurkish invaders, were mistaken for Gurkish invaders themselves and attacked by a group of armed fishermen. 12 men died.
It had actually been one, but nobody got excited over a single corpse anymore.
What we desperately need is organisation, called that leader of fashion Lord Huygen, now the soberly dressed citizen Huygen, right on cue. What we must have is tried and tested leadership.
"Might I put forward a name known to us all?" asked Durand, with a zealous shake of his fist. "A name already at the tip of many right-thinking men's tongues when it comes to the defence of the Union. A name synonymous with courage, loyalty, and fighting spirit. None other than Citizen Brock, the young lion."
Leo had expected a mixed reaction. The ex-lords and the Anglanders cheered, along with Court and some other representatives Savine had bribed his way. There was scattered applause in the public gallery. He hadn't lost all his charm, along with his leg. But there was a low murmur of suspicion, too. There were shaken heads and sullen glances. And then there was Judge, considering Leo with the same narrowed eyes that had just considered the ill-fated Bell. Charm against her was like a match against the ever more merciless winter outside, unlikely to make much difference.
"I'd have more faith in a man who'd won a battle rather than lost one," she said.
"Stauffenbeck was a battle he knew he couldn't win," lied Durand smoothly, clapping Leo on the shoulder. "But one he chose to fight anyway, whatever it cost him, against the odds, against countless royalist forces. Every citizen can see the sacrifices he made on their behalf." The king's snort of scorn could have been heard in the upper gallery. No doubt he remembered Stauffenbeck differently, and no doubt he wasn't alone. But if these trials were teaching Leo anything, it's that what really happened doesn't matter half so much as what people want to hear. He caught Glarwood's shoulder and dragged himself to his feet, took his cane from Durand, and lurched out onto the tiles as the hall fell silent.
"Citizens," he called. "Citizenesses, I gave up the Dan in my name. Gave it up happily right on this spot. I gave up my Lord Governorship, my birthright, because I believe in what we're doing here. Because I believe in the great change."
He waved down shouts of support from those representatives he'd persuaded to shout support.
"Still, it's true I was a nobleman, and the army of the people should be led by a man of the people."
Just as Sergeant Bell had been when they buttoned him into General Brint's ill-fitting uniform and sent him off, armed with essays, to lose to the royalists.
"I regret I cannot take up this honour."
King Orso gave another great snort, but it was soon lost in the applause at his selflessness and sacrifice. Perhaps he'd convinced some of the doubters to cheer. Even Judge gave him a cool nod as he dropped back onto the benches.
"You'll turn it down?" whispered Glarwood.
"Better to turn it down before they refuse to offer it," murmured Durand, lips carefully pursed as he gauged the feeling in the galleries. "Then we can take it up later."
"We need a patriot," someone was shouting. "Enough bloody generals, enough bloody experts. We need someone who truly believes."
Leo adjusted his useless arm in his jacket. "Belief won't stop a cannon stone." He could have told them that.